We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
1, 2, 3,
Cinqueroni. 1, 2, 3, Cinqueroni. 4, 5, 6, pick up sticks.
7, 8, 9, go out to dine. 10, 11, 12. Into glee.
Put it on the
12.
Shelf.
Oh, we went
better.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
13, 14, 15. Hello, everyone. My name is Ian Allred, and I'm a mini Gleeking.
16, 17, 18. My name is Lena Knatzler, and I'm a Gleeking.
19, 20, 21. We're talking about Swan Song.
22, 23, 24. Meet me by the shore.
Welcome to the episode. It's,
yeah!
It's time to go, baby.
Yeah. Are you guys so excited? Ian and I are both in crazy, crazy moods because we just finished up recording our bonus episode for our Patreon about Glee fan fiction. And it was all that. It was crazy.
We went to hell and back for that episode.
We did.
You guys, we did. I know that like this is something we all know, but do we truly know the kind of stuff that is out there on the internet?
We don't. I feel like I went to the dark web this week.
Truly, I'm like, I gotta wipe my browser history clean. The FBI is gonna throw me in jail. It was not something I would like to do again. But for our patrons, if you're on our
anything
Patreon,
for our patrons,
we do have an episode talking about Glee fan fiction, like our best friends of the podcast voted for, that has been uploaded on our Patreon. Please check it out. Like so many content warnings, and we do a pretty good job in the episode of like right before we're going to talk about something disturbing. We're like, hey everyone, like. Yeah. Some harsh content is coming up, but just know, like, if you're going to listen to that episode, like, buckle up. You're in
buckle
for
up.
A ride. A lot of stuff happens in those fan fictions.
Yeah.
Shoot.
I really don't know what else to say about it, so let's not say about it. If you're interested, you can definitely join our Patreon. And let's leave it at that, yo. For today, we're talking about Swan Song, baby.
Ooh.
If only I had some info about this episode to help me know a little bit about like what happened behind the scenes. I don't really know what I would even call that.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Anyways, do you have a recap for us?
I do. Here it goes.
Okay.
Here's a twist on Glee. I won't say it. Give me the glact.
I wanted to have a standoff.
I'm sick of these jokes.
Let's go.
Oh yeah, it's time for the Glecks.
So.
What?
The Glee episode entitled Swan Song.
I thought you were going to make like talk to me like you were like spilling some tea, like some drama.
Oh.
Like, so.
Okay, so.
This episode came out on December 3rd.
Swan Song did not, okay. It actually did not come out on December 3rd.
When did it come out?
I know everyone is saying that, but I heard from Glee Wiki. They told me, like, straight from Glee Wiki's text, that it came out on December 6th, 2012.
Honestly, hear me out. I just kind of guessed. So I'm glad to hear that you've got a source.
This is how rumors get started. Okay, but like, you did not. You cannot tell anyone this. Seriously, you cannot tell anyone this.
I won't.
Like, I will be in so much trouble. But okay. So, this episode. Oh my gosh, it is.
You gotta tell me. Come on.
It, okay.
I won't tell.
It's the 9th episode of season 4.
Kidding?
And wait, no. It's like, that's not even the craziest part. So it's the 9th. Yeah, I know. So it's the 9th episode of season 4, but it is also the 75th episode overall. Like,
are you kidding?
I am dead. Seriously, 75? I am such a bad liar. I am dead serious. I am not joking. I'm not lying right
now. That's true. You never lie.
Yo. So.
Who told you?
I'm telling you, it's Glee, literally.
Are you kidding?
Last night. Told you that? Last night, I had some alone time with Glee Wiki, and it just like told me everything. Like literally laid it all out, like paragraphs and paragraphs, all this. Like, all of these secrets about this episode is freaking wild. God. Just kept going and going.
Do you have, Glee, you have more?
Oh my God. Oh my. Like, literally, we have not even scratched the surface.
Wait, will you please tell me? Will you please tell me?
Okay. So, sorry, I just had to make sure that no one was listening. Okay, so just act cool, be cool, be cool.
Sorry.
Swan Song.
Yeah.
Was directed by Bradley. Not Bradley Bucher, sorry, Brad Falchuk.
Oh, okay.
But.
Because I heard that Bradley Bucher directed the episode before.
Yes. Okay. That's where I was getting confused. That's where I was getting confused. Yeah, but it was Brad Falchuk who did Swan Song.
Mm.
But.
Of course he did. Are you fucking kidding?
I know, right? It's like so, like such a freaking Brad Falchuk, like Mr. Goop such move. A thing.
Oh my God, so Mr. Goop of him.
Oh my gosh. But it was written by Glee's new co-executive producer, Stacey Traub.
Oh, really? Is this the first episode she wrote?
One second. I'm going to text someone. Find out. Okay, one second.
Okay. Da-da-da-da. We got to find
Did Stacey Traub write other episodes of Glee? No.
First and only?
Yeah, she was co-executive producer for right, Stacy. Stacy, honestly, good for you, so like her. Honestly, girl boss. I'll say it.
Good for her.
I don't know what a co-executive producer, what that means and what the difference is between an executive producer and a co-executive producer.
Well, they probably just both pay like the same amount of money. That's probably what it is.
But why? Because... Can a show only have one EP? I like genuinely don't know.
I don't think so. Well, I mean, an executive producer to me means like that you pay this much money for it and you are like fronting the bill.
But why is her title co and not just executive producer?
Because Ryan Murphy doesn't want her to have an executive producer.
Ryan Murphy's a sexist? I don't know. Because there's like...
I don't know shit about TV, for real.
There are like consulting producers, which that, I mean, the title kind of makes me feel like that makes a little more sense. Then there's executive producers, and then there's co-executive producers. I don't know what that is, but that's what she was. Glee Wiki, frankly, Glee Wiki did not tell me that. And I like...
Well, I mean, Glee Wiki already has given us a lot of information, so maybe it's best that we don't contact them again.
Exactly.
Because I don't want them to think we're like taking advantage of them just for like gossip.
Yeah. I mean, like, freaking, have you tried to have a normal conversation with them?
Literally, I can't. I never have had a normal conversation with Glee Wiki.
They, like, literally...
I'm always finding out about
shit. They just tell you about everything.
I know, and I'm like, frankly, it's ruining my relationships with, you know, with my friends.
Yeah, I'm like, well, Glee Wiki, when you talk to other people about me, are you telling them about past projects that I have worked on? Are you telling them about what songs I have sung in different shows? Are you telling them my date of birth and where I was
and
born?
And also, the biggest thing to me is sometimes it shares like mistakes sometimes that other people make. And I'm like, what mistakes am I making that you're sharing?
Exactly. Like, this is why I just like feel like there's
I'm
no
like,
trust
oh, my
there.
Hair, my hair was up here and then my hair was down in one shot. And you're just going to like say that to people.
Yeah. You're going to say like during freaking Oh Holy Night, there was one chair in the front row that was empty in half the shots and the other half the shots, there was someone in that. Like, I'm sure Oh Holy Night is self-conscious about that. You don't have to like keep spreading it around.
Totally. And honestly, I did actually talk to Oh Holy Night and they are really self-conscious about that. And frankly, it's upsetting to me that Glee Wiki would spread that around.
I know. It's like really,
but also
really...
if we're in that weird, place with Glee Wiki that it's like, you know?
Well, and like, I mean,
I do appreciate the gossip.
And I do, like, know? I feel bad because, you know, like Glee Wiki lost its show. And like, yes, it lost its show like 7 years ago, but like, losing a show is not totally. Something you like get over easily.
Absolutely. I think that is such a good point. So, for sure, Glee Wiki lost its show.
And so like, I want to like, you know, be there and I don't know. I don't want to like.
Glee Wiki really lost its show.
And I don't want to make it feel like that's something it can't talk about or like it doesn't have a support system. But then it just keeps telling me all this crap.
Yeah.
But I will say the Glee Wiki did tell me that the songs in this episode.
Oh, what are the songs in this episode?
Are Something Stupid by Frank and Nancy Sinatra, but specifically the Robbie Williams and Nicole Kidman version.
Right, sung
by Brittany and Sam.
Uh-huh.
And straight up something weird.
I feel like
about
had heard that from other people too.
Yeah, so I feel like that's like pretty trustworthy.
Yeah, totally.
But something that is legit weird about this is so Something Stupid was originally recorded by Frank and Nancy Sinatra, and they are fully father and daughter.
Yes.
Which there is a quote from Nancy Sinatra where she says, a lot of people refer to it as the incest song, and I think that's sweet.
Nancy. She said, these boots are made for walking.
Mm-hmm, that's just what they'll do. The other song, and the next song in this episode, is All That Jazz from Chicago, performed by Rachel and Cassie. Glee Wiki did tell me that So You Think You Can Dance finalists Melody Moore and Alex Wong are in this number.
Yeah. Two of my favorite dancers from So You Think You Can Dance.
I don't watch that show, so I'm glad you know who that is.
Melody Moore and Alex Wong have also been on Broadway. Alex was in Newsies, and Melanie was the youngest of the three daughters in Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know who else is the young? Oh, the Matchmaker daughters. Never mind.
Yes. Not like
the little ones.
Not our friend E.P. Tiff, who played one of the little ones in college.
All right. And then we got Being Good Isn't Good Enough from Hallelujah Baby, but specifically the Barbra Streisand version performed by Rachel. Oh Holy Night, performed by Adolph Adam, not a name you can name your kids anymore, performed by Rachel. This number, so Lea Michele recorded Oh Holy Night for the Glee Christmas album back in season 2. It's not in that episode, but it's on the album.
Right.
This is that recording. They just used the Christmas album season 2 recording for this number. And then also,
I can't believe that.
I know, crazy. And then also in the audience for this number is Ellis Wiley from season 1 of the Glee Project. She's in the front row.
Oh my God.
Heck yeah, good to see you.
Hey,
she gets a full close-up too at one point. Then we have Being Alive from Company, performed by Kurt.
Being Alive!
In the episode Choke, Carmen says that Being Alive is one of the most common audition songs she hears, and she gets bored by it, which is why in this episode, when Rachel tells Kurt he should sing Being Alive, he says, no, I think Carmen hates that song. And then we have Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House, performed by Finn and the New Directions. Unique is not in this performance. Alex Newell probably had scheduling conflicts, but in my headcanon, Unique quit the New Directions. What?
She's certainly in like the hug at the end.
Is she?
Yeah.
Glee Wiki, this is like what's so irritating about it is I'm just like,
I know, because sometimes it's not true.
It's just like you turn on a faucet, you literally hear stuff about everyone.
It's totally
and you
like
never
a
know.
Faucet. I feel like Glee Wiki never got the toothpaste metaphor talk.
Yeah, we're like,
you know,
like
what I'm
freaking
about.
Glee Wiki should have watched season 2 of Glee when Sue says that to the Muckraker kids when she's running the Muckraker. You squeeze a toothpaste out, you can't get it back in.
That episode was so weird.
Unique is absolutely not in this shot. Unique is not in this number. She quit the
Directions. Hold on. Yes, she is.
Where?
Keep looking. Did you look at all the shots of them hugging?
It just does one circle around all of them as they walk together, and then they hug and it ends really quickly. and she's not in
What's the name of this song?
Don't Dream It's Over.
Don't.
Oh, is that her in the gray jacket? It shows someone from behind in a gray jacket. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're right.
Told you.
It shows her for like literally walking down the staircase. She's on the far left. Okay. Well, freaking Glee Wiki.
I know. Okay, and that's the thing, is then it hurts our friendship.
Mm-hmm. Then because we get in a fight.
Here, we get in a fight.
Because Glee Wiki just lied to us. It's ridiculous. I know. Okay, well, freaking take all of this with a grain of salt, I guess, but this episode is the first time. I heard from Glee Wiki that this episode is the first time the Brad the Piano Player ever speaks on the show.
I feel like that's true.
It's the second episode where Rachel has two solos after Britney when she sang Oops, I Did It Again. Hit Me Baby One More Time and Only Exception. In this episode, Tina says to Marley, I knew Rachel Berry. I was friends with Rachel Berry. And you, Marley, are no Rachel Berry. This is a reference to the 1988 presidential campaign. At the vice presidential debate, Dan Quayle compared himself to John F. Kennedy. And his opponent, Lloyd Benson, replied, I knew Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine. Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy. In this episode, you know, Sam tries to get with Brittany. He tries to kiss her and she stops it. And she says that she's afraid for his safety because she doesn't know how. But all the lesbians in the world found out about her and Santana. And it just meant a lot to them to see these two hot young women be in love. And Brittany is afraid that she's going to put Sam in danger by dating him. This is a direct reference to the Glee fandom and the Britannia shippers who were so pissed off about Brittany dating Sam on the show.
Yeah.
I'll talk about this first. So in Choke, when Carmen Thibodeau first appears for Rachel and Kurt's auditions for Niada, it is said that this is Carmen's inaugural year at Niada. It is her first year taking over the theater department. Yet, in this episode, mm-hmm. Kurt tells Rachel that there's a bunch of past performers who have done the Winter Showcase, who have gone on to win all these awards and have great careers, but they all say the peak of their career was when Carmen handed them the invitation to perform the Winter Showcase, but that couldn't have happened because this is her first year working there and running the Winter Showcase. Come on. And like, frankly, Glee Wiki gets it from its show. You know, like, no wonder Glee Wiki is just here spreading false information. Because I know, like, don't speak ill of those who have gone. But, like, its show just kept saying whatever it wanted and contradicting itself. No wonder its Wiki is doing the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think that is a lesson for all of us that's, like, why are we so mad? Like, don't shoot the messenger, you know? Like, we should be mad at the show. Like, we should be mad at, you know? And,
like, obviously, it's like a complicated issue, you know? Like, Glee was a show, and shows are complicated, and shows are multifaceted, you know? Like, a show isn't black or white. And also, like, you should...
Glee was a show. That's true.
You shouldn't, like, speak ill of shows that are gone. But, like, frankly, Glee was not consistent, so we can't really blame its Wiki for not being consistent either. You guys, this does not leave this room. I'm dead serious.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so the final thing that Glee Wiki told me though about Swan Song, I mean, like, like, believe it or not, is that this episode had two scenes that ended up getting cut.
Two?
Yeah. So one scene was a Finn, Will, and Emma scene. So Jemma Mays was in this episode. Sorry, she got cut completely. She's on the cutting room floor. There's a little clip of it in the promo for Swan Song. It's like in the locker room, and Will says to Finn, he's like, do you remember ever fighting harder for anything in your life or something like that? But the full scene is lost to history. I couldn't find it. The other scene is a scene between Marley and Kitty. You can watch the full thing on YouTube. And frankly, it is like, it is so bonkers and stupid to me that this scene got cut.
Yeah, totally.
Did you watch this scene?
I did.
I just feel like this scene...
It made me upset. It made me upset to watch, frankly.
Why did it make you upset?
Well, I just think it shows. Well, so the premise of the scene is Marley finds Kitty in the bathroom and Kitty is very upset. And Marley's like, what's up? What's wrong? And she's sobbing and she's like, I ruined this. Like, this is all my fault. You could have gotten really hurt. I'm the one who did this to you. And Marley is like, but we can still be in glee. Like, she says something about something really beautiful, frankly, about like how she is like resolved to like dance and be young and eat and have, and you know, like be healthy and enjoy her youth and never step on a scale only at the doctor. And I thought that was lovely. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a really sweet turning point for Marley, frankly. And honestly, a nice moment for Kitty, because I think we know as an audience what she did is pretty unforgivable. And having her kind of see that and know that, like, of course, that was like some pretty fucked up shit she did. And she knows that. I don't know. I was upset.
No.
I was upset that wasn't in the episode.
I think it is literally. There's such a loud siren right now. It is one of the most egregious deleted scenes I've ever seen, in the sense that I'm like, yeah, like the stuff that's in this episode is good, but literally at the end of the episode, I have in my notes when they do Don't Dream It's Over and Kitty is there with everyone, I wrote, why on earth did Kitty come back to the Glee Club?
I know.
It made no sense to me. I did not understand it. I also, the whole episode kept being like, besides one brief line from Santana, why is no one acknowledging that this is actually Kitty's fault, that Kitty is the one who started this? And here's a scene where we see that Kitty actually enjoys being in Glee Club. We see that Kitty recognizes that this is her fault, takes ownership for the fact that this is her fault. It is frankly the first time in the whole show that we have seen a human side of Kitty.
Yeah.
And we also see how wonderful Marley is, that Marley forgives her. And even like, frankly, I really, really, really love this scene. And I think that Becca Tobin and Melissa Benoist do such a great job with it. And Marley forgives Kitty, and Kitty's reaction is just so nice, because we've been saying forever that we like Kitty's characterization is so weird because she's so evil and so one-dimensional. And like, what are we supposed to be getting from this character? And Marley forgives her, and and Kitty says, are you a crazy person? She's like, what's wrong with you? Like, I've heard theories that they think something was actually psychologically wrong with Mr. Rogers because no one could be that nice all the time.
Uh-huh.
Like, she even says, I gaslit you. I abused you. I did all this stuff. I put you in this super dangerous position. Why are you being so nice to me? And Marley says, because I think that when people are mean to someone else, it's because they're hurting.
Yeah.
And then you find out that Kitty has this thing where she essentially, from a time that she was very young, has only been praised for how beautiful she is. And so she gets all of her value off being the most beautiful girl in the room. And so being in a situation where suddenly everyone was flocking to Marley and like talking about how beautiful Marley was really messed Kitty up. And obviously that does not excuse what she did at all, but it explains like her motivation, which we did not really have a clear motivation for it.
And I think it was a good scene too. I think it was good because that whole, frankly, I thought her explanation was really funny too. She was like, I was a really beautiful baby. I was the most beautiful baby in the world. Yeah. So it made me laugh. And it told the line of like, this is what was going on. That's not an excuse, but I like got crazy. I don't know. Like, and I don't know. I just feel like it has never, like, we needed that in the show. We needed something that wasn't like, Kitty is just crazy and is trying to like ruin this girl's life for nothing.
It truly like, leaves a big gaping hole in this episode.
Yeah,
and it
absolutely
is the first time that, you know, I've thought that Kitty said funny stuff in the past, but it was the first time that I was on board with the character and was like, oh, here's a character that I can see moving forward and becoming something more interesting. But without it, it's just, oh, here's a character who did something so despicable, never took ownership, got off scot-free, and we're supposed to just forget about it.
I know. I totally agree.
Ridiculous. Anyways.
And like for what? So Lea Michele could have two solos in a row?
Seriously. Seriously. But I mean, that's just what Glee Wiki told me. So
yeah, like, well, just don't shoot the messenger of the messenger.
But those are those are Glacks, baby.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Are you ready for a recap?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't know. Something in me wants to add something in there about Rachel Berry singing twice.
And but I won't. Us having absolutely no depth added to Kitty. I'll get to it later. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a recap, then we can actually talk about this episode. All right. Here is what you missed on Glee. After Marley's onstage feint at sectionals, the New Directions learned of their loss at the competition, and Niata. Oh, I'm gonna back this all up
because you didn't do a recap song. Bump, bump.
Yeah. What are the songs in this episode? Dun, 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 dun. And I'll recap. So good. God, I'm so awesome.
What
it was the best
that?
Recap song ever? It was in All That Jazz. I said, and a recap. That's the fun thing about it is you couldn't even tell what it was. That's how awesome I did it. You know, when like someone does a rendition of a song.
And you're like, I can't believe like, that's the same song.
It feels brand new. Uh-huh. It feels brand new. God, I love myself. And a recap. Here's what you missed on Glee. After Marley's onstage feint at sectionals, the New Direction learn of their loss of the competition at Niata. The time rolls around for the winter showcase, and freaking freshmen never get invited to perform. But because our girl Rachel Berry is totes not like other freshmen, she gets an invite. Her and Cassie have a sexy off at McKinley. Glee Club is totes disbanded and cannot rehearse in the choir room anymore. But Finn is determined to rehearse whenever they can. Things spark between Sam and Britt. Watch out, lesbians of the world. Everybody's moving on from Glee Club. Rachel, being better than everyone else, wins the showcase. And Kurt gets the chance to perform at the showcase for another shot at his audition and makes it. The New Directions soften their hearts just in time for the holidays and reban the club. And that's what you missed on Glee.
Oh my gosh, are you serious? I should watch this episode. That sounds thrilling.
It, you know? Yeah. Did you like this episode, Ian?
Frankly, I did like this episode.
Yeah, I like this episode fine. I think Thanksgiving is well better, yeah. But...
I think Thanksgiving is better for sure, but I still liked this episode. I had a good time with it.
Yeah. There are some things that happen in this episode that are egregious to me.
Oh.
But...
Absolutely, yeah.
And also learning of that scene being cut, I'm like, what is this show's goal? What's this show's goal?
I don't. It's to give Lea Michele more screen time. Frankly, I think you're right about that. What I really like about this episode is it is truly, which I got some thoughts about how they handle this plot line moving forward in the rest of the season. But we'll get to those when we get to future episodes. But it's taking the show in a completely new direction that we have never seen before.
A what? A completely what? A
completely nude erection that we have never seen before, which is what is the Glee Club without competitions?
Yeah.
That it has always, we talked about this a lot, that after season one, they've always desperately been searching for a way to give stakes to sectionals because it's always mm-hmm. like, well, of course they're going to win sectionals because we know they're going to go to nationals this season. And they always
have- Yeah, like last season was so crazy to me because I was like, they are planning for nationals mm-hmm. week one. And I'm like, this makes no sense because you have like three other competitions to do before you get there.
But it's always just been like we as an audience, it was guaranteed they were going to win sectionals, whatever.
Yeah. And but also Rachel was there, and you know, so.
I mean, last in season three, no, she wasn't. She was banned for competing.
I guess you're right.
True. That's how they tried to add stakes to it. But
who does this show think Rachel Berry is? Oh my God.
More important than the Kitty Marley dynamic. That's it.
Oh my God. And especially more important than, like, you know, having a character go through something really traumatic. And, you know, more so than that, having one of our main characters, like, be a key, you know, player in that terrible traumatic thing. And then, like, you know, just fucking leaving it. No, no resolution.
She's got to get two ballads. We got to get those two ballads from Rachel.
You know, and you know, I guess so.
But
whatever.
Even last episode, the show finally acknowledged all the characters are like, oh, well, of course we're going to win sectionals at sectionals. We always win sectionals. And I think having them lose sectionals is so exciting because it has never happened before. And then especially Finn, who has no direction in life and has such imposter syndrome and doesn't know what he's doing, to have him take over the club and then they lose a competition they have never lost before. What does that mean for him? What does that mean for his self-esteem? And then the whole idea of this club gave all of these kids an identity and it brought them all together. Who do they become and who are they now that this club doesn't have a purpose?
Yeah.
I think all of that is really cool and really exciting. And I really enjoyed this episode for exploring that, essentially.
Yeah, totally. I agree. And, you know, and I think one of my structural issues with this show is it's like it's obsession with competition.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have never really understood that. And I don't really understand, like, you know, Will Schuster showing them their 12th place trophy and like rubbing it in their faces like a dog who just like peed on the floor. You know what I mean? Like it's never something I've ever understood or really resonated with in the show. So I completely agree. I'm excited to see where this goes. And I think it's also a good thing because, you know, they say it in the show. It's like, it's not about competition. It's about 11 tunes. And I relate to that.
That's what my life is about. It's about 11 tunes.
Like, they're like, Lena, what are you on earth for? And I go, you know, 11 tunes.
Something that I don't like about this episode. So they lose sectionals because they were disqualified, because Marley fainted and everyone ran off stage to make sure she was okay. Here's the deal. First of all, those judges are literally heartless for disqualifying them for
monsters.
That.
Monsters. Monsters.
Horrific. And then you get this weird dynamic where Will is more concerned about everyone getting back on stage than staying with Marley and making sure that she's okay. All of that's very gross. And then you have the grossness the rest of the episode of Tina fully blaming Marley and constantly bullying her for fainting on stage and talking about how she ruined Tina's senior year.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's so weird to me. It's like there is this facet of the Glee Club right now where everyone, especially with Marley, everyone knows what is going on with Marley. Everyone in this room, even right now, and everyone that was around for Gleece knows that Marley is struggling right now. Everyone knows. And now those words have been fucking spoken, like that she has been skipping meals and that she is like not, you know, in a place to be performing right now. Everyone has heard these words and Santana has like called it an eating disorder at this point. And still, either like everyone is ignoring it, like Will and Finn, who are the teachers of this club, ignoring it fully and like not saying a damn word to anyone ever, or they're Tina and they're like bullying her for it. And it's like, can we get to the root of this issue? Like, why are we yelling at Glee Wiki when we should be yelling at Glee? Why are we yelling at like Tina, why are we yelling at Marley when we should be yelling at Kitty? And then they go and cut this scene where finally someone admits that it's Kitty's fault.
And like,
I don't know, dude.
Why are we so concerned about the fact that we lost sectionals when like this girl in the club's life is in danger?
Absolutely.
And I, you know, as I said, I really like the idea of them losing sectionals and seeing where they go from here. The other day I went to Alex's because he isn't caught up and he's never seen Glee before. And he was like, I want to watch the episodes so that I can listen to your podcast. So I went over so he could use my Apple TV and we could watch the episodes. And I was editing and then like in and out, kind of just like peering at what he was watching. And he rewatched Thanksgiving. And I will say this right here, right now, and you can disagree with me. In my opinion, Thanksgiving is the best warbler competition performance in the entire show. I won't deny that, like, the warblers...
I think that it's the best competition performance. What I was saying last week is the warblers do not do well during competitions, and I'm always upset with them.
Well, I think they did well during Thanksgiving. I think both those numbers, I think Whistle and Live Over Young are really, really, really good. And frankly, as much as I liked Gangnam Style, are better than Gangnam Style. And I think it's a more powerful story because now it's like, oh, the New Directions would have won if Marley hadn't fainted. I think it's better that Marley does not faint and straight up the Warblers just beat them because the Warblers did a better job. And then we lose all of this problematic stuff of, you know, people overlooking the fact that Marley's life is in danger and Tina openly bullying Marley. And then the Finn stuff makes more sense because it's like, oh, I failed as a director. The number that I directed lost to sectionals. Totally. And then we can still have Marley feel like it's her fault because Marley is like, you know, I wasn't at my best. And she can still essentially have her heel turn where she realizes this is unhealthy. And that competition was really hard for me. And I personally feel like I let the club down because I wasn't performing at my best. And if I was performing at my best, then maybe we would have won. So Marley can still go through what she goes through in this episode, but then remove all the disgusting, like the other characters either ignoring her or being mad at her. And also just stakes wise, I think it's a bigger deal to lose because you lost and not lose because someone fainted. I wish they would have done that. Also, I just straight up think the Warblers deserve to beat them because they did a better job.
My whole thing with the Warblers is just like Teenage Dream, Bills, Bills, Bills. Nothing will ever touch that.
And I hear you. I don't know how much I agree that those numbers, I think those numbers are more iconic. But I think they're more iconic because they got that Klain element. But if I was, you know, someone who had never seen Glee and I watched these four numbers in succession with no knowledge of anything about these characters, I, in my opinion, personally, they're about on par with each other. I enjoyed them as much. And I think that's a hot take. I do not think that's a popular opinion, but it is mine.
Okay. Let's talk about McKinley first.
Okay.
And then end with New York, just because we're already kind of talking about that. And I, you know, I think the stuff that happens in New York is probably the stuff I don't know. We'll talk about it later.
Okay, shoot.
You know my feelings already. But, like, let's talk about McKinley.
Okay.
Okay, so the club is disbanded. Oh, shit. What now? Tell me, how'd you feel about this plotline?
I love this plotline. I feel bad for all of these actors who are brought back to stand and stare. All the alumni, literally, Harry Shum Jr. and Mark Saling are both on set to stand in the background for one scene.
I wonder if it was like on like the same day.
But Diana Agron is not there. I mean, I guess they'd.
Well, was Diana Agron there for the show circle?
No, but Amber Riley also is not there. That's just confusing because Diana Agron was a special guest star, so I think they'd have to pay her more to put her in a second episode. Yeah, but sure. Amber Riley is main cast, so if it was filmed on the same day, why is she not in that scene?
I don't know.
It's bizarre to me.
I don't know. And I don't know. I think you're probably right. It probably was filmed on a different day, but I would come in to just stand there.
That's true.
That's just me.
I mean, I probably would too if I had nothing else going on. Who cares?
Cash my check.
And also in that same scene, I do want to say I think that Kitty is written with pretty much no depth, especially because the one scene that gave her depth was cut. But shout out to Becca Tobin. She is doing her... She is working her hardest to give this girl some depth. She, when Santana says... When they say, like, Marley fainted, all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. And Santana says something to Kitty about... It's something along the lines of, oh, is it because you've been telling her to skip meals? Or is it because... Essentially, is it because you have been pushing her to have an ED? And... Mm-hmm. Kitty's response in the script is, no, why would I do that? And it would be so easy to deliver that as a sarcastic, like, no, why would I do that? As like,
yeah,
I'm evil to my core. I view this person as an object. Get off my back. Becca Tobin delivers it with, like, you can tell that she is so shell-shocked. She did not expect it to get this far. And she is just now realizing how much she has screwed over Marley and what a dangerous position that she has put Marley in. And yet she still is too scared to take responsibility. It's just, frankly, I was impressed with how much vulnerability and nuance was in her delivery of that line, considering that the line itself has no delivery or nuance written into it.
Yeah.
And I also noticed rewatching the episodes with Alex in dynamic duets, when Jake and Ryder are singing Superman, both trying to, like, vie for Marley's attention, Becca Tobin the whole time looks so incredibly hurt. Like, on her face, you can see that it is so hurtful to her that she sees these two guys being so interested in this other girl and paying no attention to her. So this character is written as one-dimensional, but shout out to this actor for trying her best. Yeah. To add
but
a
also
second and third
a
dimension.
Warning to this actor, watch out. Don't add too many dimensions or you'll get Diana Agron. So watch out.
Don't give this character a soul
totally
or you'll get cut out of the show.
See Ryan Murphy being the Ryan Murphy he is, where he just wants, like, a soulless villain. Mm-hmm. Like, being there in the editor's room and being like, you know what, take this out. Like, I don't care. Like, we just, like, I just want a villain. Like, yeah. Well, she can apologize later or whatever.
Ridiculous.
I need another solo for my girl.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so, you know, she fainted, they're disqualified, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we have two different things. We have Sue in her office with Becky, imagining what the New Directions lives are going to be like without the Glee Club.
So funny.
And then we get the reality of what the New Directions lives are like without the Glee Club. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on these two little montages we get?
I am obsessed with the fake one, specifically, like, Brittany being like, honestly, I got into a really nice college. Frankly, Glee was holding me back. Like, that was really funny. I loved it. I thought it was really funny.
I love Tina Cohen-Chang in the fake one. Her, like, very, very cheery, as if she is in a commercial, turning around over her shoulder directly into the camera and going, I'm a drug dealer in the Lima Crack District.
Mm-hmm.
That is
so funny.
So funny to me.
Very funny. Yeah, I love... this is one of my favorite parts of the episode, is the, like, where are they nows? I think it's so funny. Just, like, the question of this episode in general, like, what is Glee Club without competition? And, like, what is Glee Club... Like, who are these kids without Glee Club? You know, I just think it's very fun. And I love that all these kids yearn so much to belong to something that they're going to find it anywhere. I think that shows a lot of, like, how much that's one thing I really like about all these kids in general. Yeah, I just think it's very cute, very sweet.
Yeah, it's fun to see Artie as a band kid and Unique is on the hockey team. I also love...
So cute.
Artie sees that Tina and Blaine have joined the Cheerios and he says, how could you do this? And they say, well, I mean, it's our senior year. Don't you want to be a part of a team and compete? And Ryder walks up and says, yeah, that's why we joined the basketball team. And Jake says, well, that's why you joined the basketball team. I joined because I'm good at basketball.
Yeah. Honestly, a really sweet moment of all of these kids in the hallway, like, finding each other. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very sweet.
Finding
also,
each other from their different worlds.
Ryder and Seriously, and Ryder and Jake like join the basketball team together. I'm like, oh my god, the best friends. I love these two. Let's make them friendship bracelets.
Bonded for life. Shoot. Bonded,
seriously. But yeah, I like all of this. And I think it fits what we know about all these kids that like Marley is the one who like is like not moving on and wanting to stay in Glee Club. I think that's also a sweet thing. Yeah. After that, we have the Sam and Brit stuff and the lesbians of the nations. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So funny. Very meta. Also, I'm certain for like the lesbians of the internet watching the show at the time, very hurtful. I don't know. Maybe it's funny though.
Frankly, straight up, I do think it was probably hurtful. I also don't think Glee was out of line.
I certainly don't.
Like, sorry, Britney's bisexual. She's allowed to date people of both genders. I know.
And honestly, I think a big thing for, I mean, any person and queer people in general is like the biphobia of like sometimes bi people look like they're in a straight relationship, but they're still queer. I loved watching them kiss at the end of the episode. My roommate and I, we were like, oh my God, don't you love it when two bisexuals are in a relationship and it accidentally becomes straight?
I was thinking the same thing.
But yeah, and it's totally, and I think, honestly, what Britney says, I think is very, very true, where it's like, I don't know how they found out, but a lot of lesbians on the internet, it's very important to them that Santana and I are together. And I think that's true. And I think it's hard. I was watching clips of the Australian Bachelorette that happened this last year. Did you hear anything about that?
Mm-mm.
So she was bisexual. And so they had, they had men and women on the show. And she ended up choosing a man at the end. And she had this whole speech at the end where she was like, spoilers for your Australian Bachelor, just told you she ended up with the guy. So she had this whole speech at the end where she's like, I feel like I have this obligation to like be some sort of be a representation for queer women and bisexual women. But I also have a duty to be true to my heart. Not that this has anything to do with Britney, but I think it's also like, I liked the show, recognizing that it felt like it had it wanted to be some sort of representation, and then it's like, but also she's bisexual, she can date Sam, she is allowed, you know, she can follow her heart.
Mm-hmm. Frankly, I have seen, and it has gone away now, but I remember seeing so much hate online for Britney and Sam that I'm glad that Glee said this, because it's like, Santana, and I mean, Santana's not really on the show right now, but she continues to be a main cast member on the show. And Santana is straight up a lesbian. So like, she's going to have girlfriends. She's going to date women. Yeah. Britney is allowed to date everyone that she's attracted to. Mm-hmm. And I think a huge problem with Glee is the fans would ship certain pairings so hard that Glee then got scared to ever abandon those pairings. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of holds the characters back because they can't explore other relationships. Yeah. So I frankly respect the fact that Glee was like, we know that you guys don't like this, but sorry, it's what we're doing with this character right now.
Yeah.
And also, straight up, Heather Morris one time in an interview, like around season four, when season four was airing, mentioned that she really liked Britney and Sam together. She really liked their dynamic. And she got a ton of hate from fans.
Mm.
That fans were so pissed at her and that she like abandoned Britannia and she didn't care about that representation. It's so toxic. Never did she say she liked it more than Britannia. She just said that she liked this dynamic as well. And suddenly she's like homophobic somehow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And
I don't know. I think it's in the queer community, and at least like from my perspective, and even my own head, I think biphobia is totally one of those things is so rampant and crazy. And I feel like sometimes I even have to like talk myself out of like biphobic tendencies, my internalized biphobia. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know, like just because, I don't know, that sucks about Heather Morris. And that sucks that, I don't know, like, you look at these two characters, frankly, I'm a Blammy, and also I love Britannia. Like, you look at these two characters, and it makes sense that they would get along, and it makes sense that they would, like, you know, find comfort in each other, and they, like, they're both two people who see the world in a way that I think would match with each other. I think this only makes sense for this situation. Mm-hmm. And Brittany is still in high school. Sam is in high school. Santana is not. They are not in a place right now, and that's okay. I don't know. Yeah. Sorry. I don't know.
I do think that season two Sam maybe wouldn't be as compatible with Brittany.
Yeah.
But he's been...
But who Sam has become,
he's
yeah.
He's been majorly Flanderized, and I do think that this Sam is very compatible with Brittany.
Yeah, not the dyslexic Sam we met on the first day, but certainly the impression, silly goose Sam, the nerdy Sam. Mm-hmm.
All right. What do you think of Something Stupid? I think it's good. I don't have much thoughts beyond it besides they sound nice. It's charming. It's lovely.
I agree. I also love how the band just doesn't know where to go. They're like, I love the idea that, like, even the band, like, after Glee Club is disbanded, they're like, what do we do? I don't really know.
Do we have to start talking now?
Also, where are they rehearsing? Is there not a band room?
No. Well,
I guess not.
Once again, the big, big, big stain over this entire plot, which we have come across before in the season, is... The Glee Club owns the auditorium. The school cannot ban them from performing there.
Yeah.
It was bought for them in season one. The writers just forgot. But, you know, if we...
Maybe the band bought it. I noticed they said something about, like, something in what's-his-face's Principal Figgins' office... I think they said that someone else owns the auditorium now, but they didn't say it in so many words like they own it, but they said, like, this person has dominion over the auditorium now. And I think that's me giving the writers too much credit, but they did say something like, this person owns it now.
That is absolutely you giving the writers too much credit, because there is a future episode of Glee where the writers somehow remember that April bought them the auditorium and it becomes a plot point again.
Oh, okay.
They just play fast and loose with it.
Honestly, I hear you. There's no show Bible, and that's the truth.
Yeah, that is the truth. That's all my Bram thoughts. I think they're cute together.
Yeah,
I
agree.
Brittany should be allowed to date men. She's bisexual, everyone. Let's chill out about it.
She should also be allowed to date people that are...
Yeah, in the same stage of life as
her. School.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's I've said this before. I think relationships between college kids and high school kids shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, they're complicated.
Yeah.
Other stuff I like at the beginning of this plot line, just the image of... the choir room being torn apart by the Cheerios. It's so, like, symbolic, and seeing them ripping the panels off the walls, and then when the Glee Club meets in the choir room and it is completely stripped bare, is very harrowing. I also love Finn and Sue fighting over the Nationals trophy and then carrying it together to Figgins' office, but coordinating
so
like,
funny.
Oh, look out for the door jam.
So funny. There are some... Who... Oh, my God. Someone... Is it Sue who is talking to Blaine and Tina about joining the...
The Cheerios.
About joining the Cheerios. And she says to Blaine, like, I've actually been looking for a non-flammable gay. And then she says... and I think the Cheerios could use a quote-unquote... dash of yellow dye number whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I understand they know that Sue is like a bad person, but someone has to sit there and write that.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel disgusting. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I just like, it is so unfunny to me. Like these jokes, like it is so unfunny. That's my thought about that. She does look so cute in her little ponytail with her little bangs. Unique. A big shout out to our girl Shangela, who was just on this show. Unique says the word hallelujah, which is Shangela's like tagline. She always goes hallelujah. And I was like, that is Alex Newell knowing Shangela's tagline and saying hallelujah. I loved that. That was very exciting to me.
Heck yeah.
Heck yeah. What else more is there to say about what happens here? Do you have more? Oh, there is certainly more that happens.
We haven't talked about Finn and Marley. I do agree that Finn super ignores what Marley is going through, which is not good. But that aside, their relationship is very sweet in this episode. Mm-hmm. That Finn is determined to keep the club going and Marley is determined to keep the club going. There's that scene when they all meet in the auditorium and Finn is like, the only time I could get the auditorium was right now for 6 minutes and this Friday at 9:30 p.m. and I'll be here and I hope you all will be here too. And Marley says, I will be there. And then everyone else leaves. I don't know who decided to turn the lights out on their way out.
Let's theorize. Which one do you think?
Tina.
I think it was Artie.
I think it was Tina. Tina is a mega bitch in this
episode. She is so mean. She is so mean.
She is like the mean. And I remembered that Tina became like a little self-centered and a mean girl in season 4. I did not remember it was to this extent. Mm-mm. My goodness. But I think their dynamic is really cute. And then they have the Friday rehearsal and Marley shows up and it's just the two of them and Marley has found a place for them to rehearse and it's, you know, outside at 5 p.m. in the quad during winter. But you have the Breakfast Club montage of Finn writing all of the Old New Directions.
So cute.
That scene's awesome.
Thanks for bringing that up. That was so cute. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I like this journey that Finn goes on too. Because I think it's like a journey for him to convince himself that competition isn't everything. And just because they didn't win a competition doesn't mean they're not worth anything. It doesn't mean it's not like a thing that, like a relationship to cultivate and not a club that's, you know, it's just worth something, you know. And I think I like the journey that he goes on. Obviously, he is ignoring the Marley of it all, but also, like, I agree, their relationship is very cute. And that montage of, like, Tina and Blaine reading the email while, like, hula hooping and everyone, like, get it. I don't know.
As Sue really says, cute. You have assassinated William McKinley all over again.
And like all the cheerios like suspended, they're all in like aerial silks. It's so funny.
I just really like the idea of Finn, who has no direction in life and feels like such a failure, has just been served up like the failure of all failures. You literally lost the only competition that the Glee Club has never ever lost.
Totally.
The Glee Club has ended its competitive season. And then for his ex-girlfriend, who in his mind is like the most talented, successful person ever, and he always felt like he wasn't good enough for her, and to hear that she is at the most competitive performing arts school in the country, and she got invited, she's the second freshman in history to be invited to perform at the showcase, and she won the showcase, and she is doing these incredible, amazing things. And it's probably making him feel like, who am I? Like, clearly Rachel's so better off without me. I am just such a failure. And then to have Rachel be the one to say, Finn, even if we as a Glee Club had never won a single trophy, it still would have been worth it. And I still would have been glad to be in that club. It wasn't about the trophies. It was about the music. It was about the friendships. It was about Mike and Brittany dancing together. It was about Puck and Artie being friends. I think that's so special for Finn to hear that from Rachel, to have her be the one to be like, it's not about these accomplishments and like these trophies. And Finn to realize, the Glee Club is worth something even if it doesn't win. But also to realize, I am worth something even if I am not,
great point.
Successful in the world's eyes, even if I'm freaking working at my stepdad's tire shop and coaching a losing Glee Club, I am still worth something and I am still creating an environment that is a safe space for these kids. And totally. That is more valuable than getting a bunch of trophies for these kids. Like, if they wanted that, they could just go to Carmel.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
I agree. Just think this storyline is frankly really, really awesome. I think it's the most exciting idea to come out of season four so far. And I don't love how it's handled in future episodes.
I hear you.
But as a jumping off point, this episode is very exciting.
Well, I look forward to talking about the rest of it. And I totally agree. And I didn't even think about it in terms of like Finn seeing even himself as like a worthwhile person if he's not, you know, quote unquote, winning. So I think that's a great point. I love that thought.
It also like speaks so much to how wonderful of a person Marley is that in the stupid deleted scene that should not have been deleted, she sees Kitty. She sees this girl who has been abusing her and gaslighting her. And she sees the humanity in her and is like essentially wants her to be happy. And then she sees Finn and helps Finn realize what this club meant to her and helps him get it back on its feet. I just think the Marley Finn connection is really, really special in this episode.
Yeah, totally.
Dang.
Dang.
Some offhanded thoughts about this plot line. Becky asks Sue what it feels like to finally have destroyed the New Directions. And Sue says, you know, Becky, it's odd. I've waited for this moment for a long time, but now that it's here, I have a strange empty feeling. And Becky says, that's what I felt when I saw Prometheus.
Yeah. So funny.
That is one of the best jokes to come out of this show.
So funny. I love Becky. Prometheus.
Brittany tells Sam, because he says that she's one of the only people who understands him. And she says, well, it's because you're a genius and most geniuses aren't appreciated until it's too late. Like Einstein or the Spice Girls. Very true.
Spice Girls. I loved that line. I was like, agreed.
And also, of course, Brad, the piano player, speaking for the very first time to thank Sue for ending the Glee Club because he hates those kids so much.
And well,
do you
makes
know
sense.
How degrading it is when they turn to you and say, hit it, and just expect you to know what song they're going to sing?
Little brats. Will is not teaching those kids how to talk to their accompanists correctly. Rude. Rude.
They go to New York, I love that line so much. They're never going to get cast for anything. If you talk to your accompanists like that, you're not getting hired. Yeah,
seriously. Half the time it's like Jason Robert Brown randomly. Just kidding. I'm literally kidding. That's not true. I love that. I love that scene so much. I feel a kinship to Brad, like I feel a kinship to Neck Brace Cheerio, where it's like every time I see him, I'm excited. And I'm like, oh, I love that. And then he finally gets to talk and it's like, oh, I love that. But it's also like kind of like after I saw Prometheus, like I feel empty inside. Like, oh my God, my friend just left. So.
Oh, I love it. It's my favorite part of the episode.
Really?
I mean, spoilers on my best part. The Brad monologue is my best part of the episode. I think it's
hysterical. I love that. That's super exciting. I love that.
Real All quick, right. let's wrap okay. it up with Don't Dream It's Over. Hey Now, Hey Now.
I love this song, Hey Now, Hey Now. So sweet. Finn sounds really great on it. And I like the harmonies they do on it too.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sweet, very cute. So cute. I love the snow.
First,
feels very exciting.
First Ohio winter representation. I was
ever.
Like, we're acknowledging that it would be dark and cold during the winter there.
I know at 5 p.m. it's like pitch black. I love this song. I think it's really cute. And I think it's a sweet moment and a sweet song to like bring them all back together.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not over.
Yeah, I really love this song and I really love everyone just coming out of the woodwork to come freaking rehearse for Glee Club at 5 p.m. outside in Ohio in the winter because they all realized we would rather be together in this club than be apart in whatever the heck other stuff we were doing.
That's all my thoughts.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Here we are, New York City, swan song. Ended first semester at NYADA. What are your thoughts?
Well, here are my thoughts. My overarching thought is I don't buy that Rachel is this special.
Amen.
And I'm getting, frankly, sick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to jump right into it. Her rendition of the Barbara Strong, Barbara Strong is, frankly, just a shitty impression of Barbara Streisand. It is not a new take on this song at all. It's not in the way that I think someone should sing that song that is just one person that's not Barbara Streisand. It's just her impression of Barbara Streisand. Like, everything is just like her copying Barbara Streisand. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's like, I mean, that's a pretty college freshman thing to do, like to take a song and to like copy what your favorite person does with it. And I think that's not wrong, but it's also not what a winner of a competition their freshman year is going to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's something you got to learn to like make your own mark. And it's a good, like, it's good, but it's not superb, like Carmen Thibodeau says. And this like sexy off between her and Cassie, it is so weird to me. It is so weird to me that this world that we're watching thinks that Rachel Berry is the sh** and rewards her for it. When frankly, I think she's great and I think she's awesome. I would not say she is like, I just don't know what the, what? I don't think she's, huh? Like, who does the show think Rachel Berry is? And that's just not the truth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I think Rachel as a character, you know, obviously she's been like struggling in her dance class. And she says even in this episode, she's like, I know I'm not a dancer and that's okay. Like, I'm a singer. I'm a singer first. That's okay. What has Rachel gone through that has like rewarded her, even just as a character in this like journey she's on, this hero's journey she's on, what has rewarded her this like huge win? I don't know. I just like am kind of like, I don't know. I just don't buy it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I hate the spotlight. This is the true beginning of the Rachel Berry wish fulfillment arc that will continue for the rest of the show. It is what was really refreshing about NYADA was suddenly Rachel was ordinary. Suddenly Rachel was in an environment where everyone was talented and she was no longer the clear front runner. And what we loved so much about the new Rachel was, oh, it's so exciting to see Rachel struggle with something and to have an authority figure who, like, you know, doesn't like Rachel in the way that Sue didn't like Rachel, but be right about it. Be like, you have a bad attitude, you are entitled, and that's not going to get you far in this business. Mm-hmm. And that lasted for all of like two or three episodes.
Yeah.
And now Rachel is the second freshman in like, what, 60 years to be invited to perform at this showcase and the first freshman ever to win it. And don't you know, she's the most talented girl at NYADA. And she stands up to her dance teacher and she disrespects her, but she's right for doing it. You go, Rachel. You go, girl. She's solving all the world's problems. I feel like in this one episode, they undid everything that was interesting about the New York plot, because then you also get Kurt. And what was so interesting about the Kurt plot line was it was seeing him take a different path than he expected. It was him coming, like, facing the failure of not achieving his plan A and having to create his own plan B and learning, oh, you know, I love performing, but maybe I have other passions outside of performing that are as worthy of exploring. And getting his own identity outside of Rachel through another job and getting an and through a different career and stuff that she knows nothing about and becoming his own person. And that's all completely undone by having him get accepted into Niata at the end of this episode.
A huge agree.
So he can just continue to be Rachel's accessory as she goes to class and is the star of Niata, and he's there so she can gossip with him in between classes. I literally, like, I don't hate every moment of this plotline. I think there's good stuff in it. But I think everything that this plotline does undermines everything good about what's going on in the New York plotline, and we're left with just absolutely uninteresting stuff moving forward for these two characters.
Huge agree. I completely agree. I think this episode, I can see Ryan Murphy sitting down in the writer's room being like, let's take a huge shift. Like, let's turn the McKinley on its head, and let's turn New York on its head with Kurt, you know, having a purpose at Vogue.com, having a good time, really connecting with his boss. And then let's just like send him backwards. Let's send it backwards. And honestly, like, I just like, obviously, if performing is his dream, sometimes it takes a minute. It's no, like, that's really great if that is like his dream. But I thought we were going to a new direction here.
Yeah, of a new direction.
Him find a new direction here of him finding a new thing in him, his own thing, mm-hmm. You know? And I agree. Like, I think Kurt's downfall is his relationship with Rachel. And I just think it sucks. And yeah, I don't know. And especially learning with what we learned about things being cut from this episode. For what? For Rachel to sing twice? For Rachel to sing twice? Huh? I didn't need that. I also, if they're going to tell me that she is the best in this entire school, okay, that's fine. I'll buy that. Let me at least have some resolution on the trauma you've put me through for the last like month. My God, I don't get it.
Yeah, I hate this stuff. Do you want to talk about the sexy off?
Yeah.
Talk about all that jazz.
Okay. I mean, it's everything we've already talked about. It's like Rachel Berry not knowing how to dance. It's like Miss Fabletics being lifted up by her coochie. Like, and it's just embarrassing. It's like she's bringing shame to Lima, Ohio. And I'm like, there is no goddamn way she is the best performer in this school at all. And like, she's not even, like being, like, in this sexy off, like, she's not even being a good performer. She's just trying to, like, be Lea Michele being hot.
There is a moment, it's the right up here is where I store the juice, where she is fully just standing on a table.
Seriously, and I'm like, this is your dance class. I literally thought the same thing.
And that's what pisses me off so much about this number, is Rachel keeps being like, well, here's the thing, is I'm an incredible singer. Here's the thing, is I'm an amazing singer. And hear me out. You are. You're correct for thinking that you're an amazing singer. This is a dance class. You are paying money for this woman to make you a better dancer. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously, Cassie's a super toxic educator and she, you know, she should be fired. But can you imagine if you went to math class and your teacher was like, hey, you're really struggling with these equations. Like, you really need to work on this to learn it.
And I wrote them a poem to tell them, like, that they're wrong.
Exactly. And you're like, well, I'm a much better poet than you. So actually, I'm not worried about it. And like, okay.
It's like, I'm going to be fine.
This is math class. Like, my job is to teach you math. Sorry. Oh, it's so ridiculous. And you got Kate Hudson doing high kicks, doing splits, being lifted, and then like flipping under herself while Lea Michele stands on a table and everyone snaps around her. It is, it's so dumb.
It's embarrassing. And even like there's this moment where like Cassie like brings her across the floor. Mm-hmm. And she like can't even like keep her feet under her. Mm-hmm. And I get the sense that she's like pushing her, but it's like she can't even dance it. She's not even like doing the, they call me La Cuifa, like the like the jazz like walk across there, the
floor thing. Yeah.
That I get the sense they were maybe trying to have her do, but she certainly like couldn't keep her feet under her. Like this entire number is just so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. And I don't, and this rivalry that these two have is so weird to me. It's just so weird to me. And I, Rachel writing poems to like prove to Cassie that she's good at math. I'm over it. I got it. You stood on a, and you said, pour the juice.
Yeah.
Like, Rachel,
I definitely think there is power in being like, this is not my thing and I need to accept that. But the thing is, Rachel kind of refuses to accept that. Yes, she does say you, quote, might be a better dancer than me. But she has gotten no humility from this class. She essentially is like, and so that means that I'm better than dancers because I can sing. So sorry, it's infuriating.
Yeah. You're so right. And I think sometimes, I don't know, like I am not a hashtag dancer. I will dance, but I'm not a dancer. And I'm the first one to admit that, like, I'm not going to be like the dancer triple threat, you know? And that's okay. My strengths lie elsewhere. But also, I'm not going to like say to my dance teacher that she's not worth shit because I can blah, 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 blah. You know, that's so weird.
Your dance teacher tries to correct your form and you're like, okay, sing off right here, right now then.
Yeah.
Like, no, she's your dance teacher. It's her job.
I know. Like, dude, maybe she's bad at her job, but like, go talk to the dean. Go talk to the dean. Seriously. Like, why are you settling this with a sexy off? Like, I'm over it. Also, just kiss. Just kiss already. Silly. I don't know.
Also, why on earth would Cassie be like, okay, let's have a dance off, All That Jazz from Chicago, you know it, and then fully not do the choreography from All That Jazz in Chicago?
I know. I was like, where are you getting this choreography from? Like, Bob Fosse is rolling in his grave.
They were like, original choreography, and just every once in a while, we'll do a little suggestion of a Fosse-ism, and that's it. Okay.
So weird. So weird. Also, what did they learn in this class? I can't tell.
Truly, just like this class is just Cassie victimizing one student every day is all it is.
I get it. Just we're just seeing the Rachel stuff, but like Alex Wong and Melanie from So You Think You Can Dance are also getting it.
Shoot.
Come on, babe. That's all my thoughts about that, truly. Then we have the winter showcase.
Yes.
Like I said, I'm over it.
Yeah, I will say Rachel sings the Barbra Streisand song. So they keep talking about this whole episode. Rachel is like the only freshman to have ever gotten an invite to the winter showcase in the last whatever years is Alexandra, some last name that I don't remember.
Yeah.
I was of the, and she was practically raised on the Broadway stage. I was of the impression that this was someone who attended NIADA like 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But is it fully this ballerina who's...
I don't think so. I had this same conversation. I'm not entirely sure, but the what I got to is that Cassie was talking about a different girl who was born in toe shoes, and that's that girl.
The ballerina.
And that they were talking about a freshman who was invited like 6 years ago.
Okay.
That's what I got. And I remember thinking the names were similar.
They are.
But I have like gone through this and that's the conclusion I came to. I'm not sure that's the correct conclusion. This girl could be the freshman, but I don't think so.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to rewatch it to see if the names are the same or just similar. But this girl playing the ballerina is acting when Rachel is singing the Barbra Streisand song. It cuts to a shot of her face and she looks so pissed off. She's
like, frankly, I would have loved to watch her dance.
I would have too. Shoot. All right.
And then we watch her kiss Brody.
Oh, that's right. Rachel does kiss Brody in this episode. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm doing this thing where I do whatever I want now. I'm like, okay, great, Rachel.
You've been doing that for three and a half seasons. It's
like,
not
that's
a new
the
thing.
Dutch change. Oh my God. Crazy.
And then Rachel sings another song. She sings Oh Holy Night. I genuinely love Oh Holy Night. I think it's a beautiful song. I also don't think that, you know, you can't enjoy another religion's religious music. Like, you can't think it's beautiful and be a fan of it. So 100%, sure, yeah. Like, a Jewish person could absolutely sing a Christian hymn because they think it's a beautiful song. I just feel like writers around Christmas time always forget that Rachel is Jewish.
They always forget she's Jewish. I know. I completely agree. And I think that's for money. I think that is for, like, they want to sell Christmas songs, and they know that there's a market for, like, a, you know, the Target who wants the Glee Christmas album. And they're like, what about Oh Holy Night? Like, they conveniently forget her Jewish heritage every time Christmas rolls around.
And also, like, this is the one, besides maybe Silent Night, like, the most Jesus-y Christmas song there is in the Christmas canon. Goodness sakes.
In the Christmas canon.
There's also a shot while she does the Oh Night Divine. There's a shot of the people in the audience, and a bunch of them are lip syncing along.
Yeah. I was like, what the hell is going on here?
I'm wondering if that's a commentary on actors and how actors tend to mirror what they're seeing on stage, because I will say that's true. I cannot tell you the amount of times that I have been, like, watching a performance and noticed another actor emoting with what they're watching. Like, or, like, I will even catch myself doing it if I'm in the audience and someone is singing a song that I know and I really like. I will be, like, mouthing the song along with
them. Or, like, someone sitting in the corner, like conducting the music.
Or, like, when they hit the high note, you do a little, like, you, like, move to it. I wonder if it's supposed to be a commentary on that. And if it is, like, frankly, good for them. That's funny.
Honestly,
that is true.
It was, I didn't get the commentary at all. I was like, so there's a mistake here. Because all of them are just sitting with their mouths open.
I know, they're not dramatic enough about it.
I was like, was there Oz in here that got cut? It was so weird. I'm like, is this supposed to be like Charlie Brown? Like,
wah, wah, wah?
Like, ooh.
Oh,
like
okay.
That.
Okay.
That was just my thought.
No, yeah. If it is supposed to be them mirroring what they see on stage, a good example of mirroring what you see on stage is season 3 sectionals when Lindsay Pierce sings Buenos Aires and it cuts to Kurt and Rachel mouthing in the audience. Uh-huh. And it's very funny, but very true to how that looks. This is like, it's so understated and muted that it it is very possible that they cut the background vocals but kept the shot in.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. And then our boy Kurt gets another chance at his audition because he goes and sees Carmen Tippett a little before, and he's like, hey, did you get my video? And she's like, yeah, and honestly, you lack depth. See you later.
And she says to him, I rarely give second chances, and when I do, it's on my own terms. Like when Rachel Berry fully stalked me and I said, fine, I'll let you in.
You said, that's my own terms for sure.
Oh my gosh. That's and then my own terms, I had definitely. Her win the winter showcase as a freshman.
Yeah. Like, these kids from McKinley High are special.
This Kurt stuff, I hate Kurt going to NIADA. I really, really hate it. But I do love what Carmen tells him and him choosing to sing Being Alive.
Yeah.
Being
Alive!
I love Carmen telling him that he essentially relies on spectacle and not on depth.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's talking to, he has that conversation with Rachel after Carmen is like, and after the break, Kurt's going to sing, sorry. And he has that conversation with Rachel where he's panicking. He doesn't know what to sing. And
Rachel goes, you know, what was my favorite performance? Mm-hmm. Probably, I Want to Hold Your Hand. And then Kurt goes, Rachel, my dad was in a coma.
But I genuinely love that exchange because I have said this multiple times on this show that Kurt is always doing too much. Like, I remember when he did Some People and Night of Neglect, and I was like, I would love to like this number, but why is he climbing on a jungle gym? Why is he death dropping? Like, this is not what this song is about.
This is Ian from the future. The jungle gym is actually in his performance of The Greatest Star in I Am Unicorn. I just combined those two numbers into one in my mind.
I feel like Kurt just constantly, and sometimes it really works, you know, like in Rose's Turn, where it is an explosion of fury, him high kicking and having a big light up song that says, sign that says Kurt, really works for that number. But sometimes the song is just needs to be the song, and he is always doing the most. And I totally agree that I Want to Hold Your Hand is my second Kurt favorite Kurt performance after Rose's Turn, and it is because he is finally just communicating the song. And I love that he learns that lesson in this, that he's so panicked. He's like, I can't go out there without the bells and whistles. I can't go out there without gold lamé pants or some costume or some prop. And Rachel says, no, actually, your best performance was when you were just you and you sat in the song and communicated the emotion. And that's what Carmen wants to see from you. And it's so lovely. Frankly, I would have been pissed if he went out there and did some big show-stopping number and got in. I like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like that he gets in, period. But I do like that if he had to get in, he came in, sang a very simple song, stood in one place, and mm-hmm. like, you know, it's not a vocally impressive song. It's not a song that shows off his range. It's just a song that shows his heart and his emotion.
Yeah.
And that's what won Carmen Thibodeau over.
I agree. I think it's a good rendition of this song. And I think it's like one of those songs that is so what they're going for. Mm-hmm. And I like that. Like, they're going for something that is like, you know, in your feels. And Being Alive is a perfect, perfect thing for that.
It is the best Sondheim song. What?
Is it the best Sondheim song? I don't know that I agree, but I do be loving it's that song. Good. Remember when Adam Driver sang that song?
No, I've never seen Marriage Story. Sorry.
Okay. Well, great. Awesome. Super duper. Love to hear that on my podcast. You know, I want to bring it back just for a second. Mm-hmm. I want to take you on a journey, and maybe I need to send you a picture first so you know what I'm talking about. This is while Rachel's singing both her songs. Mm-hmm. And this is how I know that no one on the set liked her. Liked Lea Michele. Mm-hmm. Lea Michele has got beautiful hair, right? It's shiny. It's beautiful. She also wears extensions. No shame in extensions. Diana Agron was wearing them last week. I'm certain a lot of you know, the people with long hair are wearing hair pieces, and that is no shame. There's no shame in extra hair. But there's this part. The entire time that Rachel's up there singing, she has all of her hair brought to the front, right? And there are like three pieces in the back. And it is all of her short pieces and one really long piece. And it looks like she brought all of her extensions to the front to be beautiful. Someone probably fixed them up, sprayed her hair, and then they circled the camera around her a million times, and not one person during the filming of both of those fucking songs came over and moved like a chunk of extension from the front to the back. And that is how I know no one likes Lea Michele on that set. I said it. They wanted to make her look like a fool. They wanted to make her look like me, scene kid Lena, me, and my extensions being exposed in the back because I want all my hair in the front. I said it.
I did not notice that. And that's some truth. All. Oh my gosh.
All right. I feel like those are all my thoughts.
I think those are all my thoughts too.
Chamez.
All right. Well, that was Swan Song.
Swan Song.
Doom, doom, doom.
Best part, worst part.
Boom.
All right, Ian, what was your best part?
Best part is Brad saying he hates the New Directions. That's comedy gold. My best song is probably Hey Now, Hey Now, Don't Dream It's Over. It's very nice, very tender. I love seeing everyone come back and choose to be part of the club again, except for Sugar, because Vanessa Lungis was busy this week. What's your best part?
God, what is my best part? I would say my best part is probably the two montages with the Where Are They Nows. I like them in all their sports gear. I like them being a part of the Crack Den district. I would say my best number is probably also Don't Dream It's Over, but probably second, I would say Something Stupid. I just think that song is very sweet.
Yes.
I think it's exciting. So those are my two best parts. What's your worst part?
My worst part is, I don't know, maybe Kurt getting into Niata. There's a lot of stuff in New York that I don't like, but I think that's what I don't like the most. He was on such an exciting path, and Kurt really hasn't had much. He hasn't had a lot to himself since the beginning of season two.
Yeah.
He's kind of always just been someone else's sidekick since then.
Yeah.
And he was on a track to become his own person and then got relegated back to sidekick by getting into Niata, and that sucks.
Totally.
What's your worst part?
I'd say my worst part is Rachel singing two times in a row and things being cut from this episode that are at this episode's detriment. So
yeah,
I'd say absolutely. That's my worst part.
Shoot. Ah! That's Swan Song, everyone. That's a season wrap.
Hell yeah.
If you got thoughts on this episode, send them to us. RecoveringGleek@gmail.com. Check out our mini-sode. If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter @RecoveringGleek and Instagram and TikTok @RecoveringGleek_podcast. And if you want to support this podcast, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. We would absolutely love that. And you can also subscribe to our Patreon. You can hear our episode on a Glee fanfiction that traumatized us. Our Patreon is patreon.com/recoveringgleek. You got monthly bonus episodes out there. If you join the higher tier, you can also vote on what you want us to talk about in the bonus episodes. And you get vlogs every other week. And both tiers also get ad-free listening to the episodes and video footage of the episodes. And if you're in the higher tier, you get a shout out at the end of our episodes, which is about to go down right about now.
10 hours of carefree, royalty-free ukulele music. Aw, sweet.
Yay.
Let's do this. It's cute. Ready?
Yes.
Here's a big thank you to our best friends of the podcast. Let me know if I said your name wrong. Here we go. Natty and Abigail and Kodiak and Kirsten and Annie and Story and Natasha and Liz, Eileen, Mariah, Manuel, Mallory, Sarah, Amina, Hannah, Matilda, Rebecca, Libby, Eve, Jordan, Andrew, Christina, Del, Sarah, Ari, Liam, Riley, Juliana, Stephanie, Haley, Raphael, Marissa, Rin, Taylor, Kimberly, Emily, Carlin, Frankie, Dana, Chase, Finley, Jocelyn, Margaret, Despina, Liz, Josie, Nash, Aaron, Alana, Marin, Hannah, Phoebe, Kaylee, Caitlin, Megan, Rachel, Aria, Jeremy, Beatrice, Eva, Emily, Anaya, Michelle, Lauren, Audrey, Marcus, Lisa, Fors, Jacqueline, Spencer, Elise, Troy, Mallory, Meredith, Phoebe, Hannah, Laura, Ray, Emily, Alyssa, Charlie, Lily, Melanie, Yanula, Sarah, Sam, Jennifer, Aubrey, Stephanie, Kat, Kelsey, Haley, Tiffany, Emily, Leah, Kelsey, Isabel, Amira, Thomas, Chucho, Cyrus, Brittany, Victoria, Aaliyah, Naomi, Haley, Robbie, Andy, Kenzie, Rhiannon, Ashley, Roman, Tara, Michael, Casey, Andre, Katie, Will, Elizabeth, Freddie, Shanid, Emma, Turtle, and Allison! Woo! Hooray! Thank you all. Thanks to our best friends of the podcast. Thanks to all who are listening today. We love that you're here. We love that you're listening. We're happy to have all of you. I hope you guys have an awesome rest of your week. And an amazing rest of your year. Happy holidays, I guess.
Oh my gosh. Next year is Christmas.
I know.
Next year.
Yeah. Next year is Christmas. Next year is Christmas.
That's true.
No, we'll see you though next. But we'll see you next week for Glee, actually. Oh my God. Can't wait. Can't wait. Super excited. Here is a kiss on your forehead. A consensual kiss on your forehead. See you later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review and tell your friends, please.
What's the craziest thing that happened to you this week?
No, the craziest thing that happened to me this week is I got stuck on the subway, stopped for a whole fucking hour middle of the night. It was so scary.
No, that's my nightmare. That's so terrible.
This day was raining all day long. And I had been working all day long from 11 to 11, 12-hour shift. My phone was like dead. It was like 18% as I left. And my commute is about an hour. So I'm like literally four stops from my house. And the train goes, we stop. And I'm like, ain't no thing. Like, trains stop all the time. It's not a big deal. 10 minutes go by. We hear a call that's like, hey, just to let you know, we're having some problems. Like, we'll get you up and running as soon as possible. Like, sorry for the inconvenience. 10 minutes go by, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, like 40 minutes. My phone is at like 7%. So what ends up happening is they end up taking us from one station to the other station behind it. So more, I live downtown. So they took us uptown. Mm-hmm. So I was now like four stations away from the station I usually get off at, and they kicked us off and they said, well, you can't go downtown anymore, so find your own way. And I was like, I don't really know the bus system in this area very well. I've really only walked through here one time. Like, I wouldn't know the way to get home. It's now midnight. And I was like, oh shit, what do I do? And it's still pouring rain. So I did what any citizen would do. I got an Uber. And my phone didn't die. But I was like, if my phone dies before the Uber even gets to me, I'd be done for. Yeah. But luckily I got home and I plugged in my phone. And that was the craziest thing that happened to me this week.
My advice for entrepreneurs is definitely to level up with Shopify. The platform is just never a worry. Like, I have so many worries, but the platform is never one. I feel like Shopify really thinks about how they can optimize. It just always feels very ahead of the curve. Everything is just super easy to connect and link. They really know what we need. Time and money that is saved, I can spend on other things and on growth.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.